Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Well, you've been patient, you've waited an entire week, and it's been worth it. We're back with Cannon Fodder. Joe here.
Troy LaValle.
Is not here today. That was his recorded voice that I prepped in advance to make you think he was here. No, Troy is here in the house, and we are excited to record Cannon Fodder episode 10. We have Skid with us for, what is this, 3 weeks in a row?
Yeah, I've actually been here the entire time. Skid. Troy doesn't know.
I've been meaning to talk to you about this, Skid. You have to leave my apartment.
You have to leave.
All right, well, I'll compromise. I'll start showering, okay?
Welcome back, good buddy Skid, and let's talk about episode 64 of the Glass Cannon Podcast this week, an episode which starts off, once again, we've had a few of these, put together, 5 out of the last 6 where we've started out with a lot of role-playing.
It's funny, you'd think Red Lake Fort would be all combat. It has been mostly role-playing so far.
That's right. I thought it would be constantly storming the walls, trying to sail. I thought it was going to be a lot like the attack on Trunel. Budgeting out healing, using the wand, we don't have time to rest. How do you save your abilities? But nope, you're right. It was really, really surprising there that we were talking to the Oracle, then debating with the general, and then now talking to an old, old spirit of an old denizen of the fort, Fabian Blix. And this is Calrianne Blix's great-grandfather, we determined, right?
No, this is great-great-grandfather. So to give you a little family tree, the one that escaped was his son, and that was Calrianne's great-grandfather. So that would make Fabian the great-great-grandfather.
Okay, yes. And he didn't die well, I wouldn't say.
No, it was not a happy ending, as it were, for the Blix
crew. we get this brutal, gruesome story from him about what happened at this fort. And now it's all starting to come a little bit clearer what Calrianne was saying about her father or her grandfather, great-grandfather, whatever, wouldn't talk about it, never talk about what had happened there. And now you start to see why. I mean, it's cannibalism. It's awful.
Yeah.
And it's a really dark, dark story, but also fascinating in a way to put together that, you know, that he tried to get his family out and the kids escaped through the well, but then one of them fell and that was the kid. And we actually talked about it on Cannon Fodder a while ago. We talked about, you know, who is this kid and what is this body? Will we ever find out, you know? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, we get the story. And imagine just for a second how awful that must have been for Calrianne's great grandfather to, you know, to be trying to escape with his brother and then to have the brother fall.
You can picture that happening. Like they're sneaking down this latrine and I'm caught. And just snap.
Falls.
His shoe gets caught in the thing. I mean, what a horrible story. Just to recount it very quickly. So you have the castellan of the fort, Tamond Varius, comes to Fabian Blix, is like, all right, here's the deal. We can't hold the siege any longer. We got to start eating each other. And I just need you to absolve me through Desna's grace of this horrible crime. And Fabian is like, absolutely not. So he kills him and serves Fabian up as the first dinner for the people. Ugh. And then Fabian, as a ghost, appears to his wife and says, you need to get out of here. Take the kids. This is what's going down. He's lost his mind. The wife does not make it out. She becomes the next meal.
I don't think we knew that. Did you tell us that in the episode?
Did I not?
That as a ghost, he told them to flee? Do you remember that, Skid?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think that might... Yeah, we snuck one out of them on Cannon Fodder.
Cannon Fodder exclusive.
We could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, we could be. But that is... pretty gruesome.
Yeah, so the wife doesn't make it out. Then one of the sons dies on the way out. And then meanwhile, this Varius character tells all the guards in there, hey, listen, all the women and children will be safe in the chapel. Let's keep them in there, and let's resume the fight. Meanwhile, he's slaughtering the women and children, feeding them to the garrison, and the garrison is, like, bouncing back, and they're great, and they're withholding the siege. And, then they find out.
Just awful.
Horrible.
Awful. But this was an interesting role-playing opportunity for Gel. Gel walks into a chapel of Desna, is face to face with an old cleric of Desna. Mm. And I thought, Skid, you just did a spectacular job.
Thank you.
Of really embodying that that personage, especially the whole Call to Dream song, which just brings a tear to the eye, Skid.
I really love that song.
Butterfly Boy.
I started listening to it. I was in the airport. I was just like, man, I haven't listened to that song in a long time. And I listened to that whole album. I was like, I didn't know it was liturgical. I never knew.
Never knew. Mm. Well, you repurposed it, and I think in fantastic fashion. You really connected with Fabian. You got him to tell us the whole story. Do you wonder if we didn't, if there's anything we missed? If there are any questions about the fort, maybe specifically, that we should have asked?
Yeah, we were saying
we didn't
this
before we headed out.
Yeah, before. There's so many times you run into an NPC who, if there's an opportunity for the DM to do an information dump.
Yeah.
And you just try to find out, you try to think, like, what all can we ask? And it always seems like you forget something.
Yeah. You, if I could go back and just ask him another question. I don't know if there's anything we...
But I can't think of something yet.
I think we tried to ask where Grenzeldeck was, maybe, or yeah, where Tommen...
Tommen Varys,
where his body was. He said he wasn't sure. I have my suspicions that maybe he's not even really dead. I don't know. I mean, obviously he's haunting the place, but
yeah.
I do have my suspicions about what is going on with him. I don't think it was as simple as Fabian says that the soldiers found out what he was doing and mutinied and killed him. That to me is a classic example of like too easy.
Yeah.
A solution. There's got to be something else going on here.
Yeah, I was thinking too that like just wondering what kind of crazy stuff must be happening in this fort that we don't even have any concept for yet.
Yeah, I mean, we're now 5 episodes into the fort and we still know almost nothing about this fort.
Yeah.
You know, well, I know we know about the orcs. We know that the orcs, we know a little bit more about Grenzeldeck and how she's losing a little bit of control and the orcs are looking to turn on the giants, blah, blah, blah.
But
we didn't know that. But about the actual, what's going on in there with the spirits and everything, like mm-hmm. with the haunting, with, yeah, we have to find this guy's bones. We have no idea where they are.
I feel like we've just started to scratch the surface.
Yeah.
And there's going to be twists and turns. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see.
Let me ask you guys as players, like you obviously went into this with certain conceptions of what the fort would be like. Now that you've had 5 sessions to do it, how vastly different is it from what your preconceived notion of the fort would be? Or similar?
Yeah, for me, it is, I don't want to say 100% different. I mean, it's filled with giants and orcs, so that's that. And I also suspected that there would be some level of haunting or spiritual nature to this because of Calrianne, her explaining something terrible happened there. My ancestors were there. Please, if you can find out anything about my ancestors. So I thought we might be going down that road a little bit, but I thought that there would be hundreds and hundreds of orcs and dozens and dozens of giants, and that there was no way we would be able to take on the fort without going through some back channel and basically assassinating Grenzeldeck. So I imagined a more clandestine approach, and that's why, you know, I wanted to go in the sewer grate. Mm-hmm. And I thought we'd sneak in somewhere, kill a few people, get Grenzeldeck, and then get out or something. Throw them into chaos. I don't know. I didn't expect it to be so undermanned. And so he really ripe for the taking. I mean, if people from Trunau came up here with any kind of an army right now, they could take the place, you know?
Well, but that's not really knowing what Grenzeldeck's capable of, though.
That's true.
You know? But yeah, on its surface, it's a skeleton crew, like, manning this place. I'm like you. I thought this would be a stealth mission.
Yeah.
And, I was also surprised and pleased to find that we have a sanctuary within the fort that we can go back to and rest. But that also means that we're going to need one. so that's a little
good
that's
tip.
A little alarming.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I'm just, I can't wait. I can't wait to get back into this.
Yeah, I'm very excited. And the, I just wanted to mention that. So I thought maybe this is something else we could do on Cannon Fodder. Lork picks up a, because of what we had talked about on the previous Cannon Fodder episode about who was this kid, it was fresh in my mind. So when he told the story about his sons escaping through the sewer, I was like, oh my God, it was like heartbreaking. I was like, now I know what happened. And Lork gets a bottle cap for it. So I was like, yes. And I thought maybe on Cannon Fodder we could start tracking these bottle caps a little more closely and really give you some idea of how rare they really are. But so far, for just the last few episodes, we're two out of the last five episodes. We're two bottle caps in the last five episodes. We'll see if we can keep that rhythm going or if it slows down. I don't know.
So who has it? Matthew has one and Lork has one?
Matthew has one and Joe has one. Yes.
And I think Gary the Celestial Dolphin still has one.
He does.
He's holding on to one.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? Lork might need to use his bottle cap next week based on what happened at the end of this episode. Now, I don't want to just gloss over the Hill Giant fight. I think that was, you know, it was fun. It wasn't too tough on us, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. But man, that cliffhanger. Oh my God. I have no idea what to expect. I mean, maybe water. You know what? Let me not get ahead of myself. Before that, there was a big decision to be made.
Yeah.
We came out of the sanctuary and we could go, in my mind, left or right. To the left was the middle buildings that bisect the courtyard. That the giant was lying on top of. And then to the right, it was straight up and into the keep, where I assume, or Lork assumes, Grenseldeck is holed up. So we debate about this decision for a little bit and decide to go the keep route. But I think that there was something to be said for going into those middle buildings, which is, you know, watching your back, completing things, getting all the information that you can. But then from a metagaming perspective, there's getting all the experience that you can, getting any items that might be valuable or useful in the keep that a pre-written adventure is probably going to put in those buildings. And to put it like Grant did, if this were a video game, I'd clear out all the middle buildings before going to the keep, which is exactly what I would do as well. So I guess two questions. One for you, Skid, is I know you're a completionist, and is this bothering you that we didn't go into those middle buildings? And then two, from a more general perspective, should we be playing Pathfinder the way we play a video game? Does that make it a better game if we're getting everything and all the information? Or might it be more rewarding to play it more like characters and not like a video game? Skid, let me know what you think.
I'm not going to lie. It is really bothering me, especially now. And I know it was bothering Grant, too. But the thing is, our characters don't know they're in a game.
That's true.
So our characters have to act like we think they would if they're in a real world. Like, they have a task to accomplish. They don't know that game designers have laid out this fort with maybe, you know, different items and fun stuff that you could use as a side quest. They don't know that.
Right.
You know, they want to kill Grenseldeck.
They want to accomplish the mission
as quickly as they can and get out.
Right.
But I, as a player, I really wanted to see whoever the was that shut that door. I wanted to go into that building.
Right. And that to me is that Troy? Well, we have him here. We can ask him. Skid, he's right here. Troy, is this? Were you trying to lure us into those buildings for a specific reason? Were you trying to give us a non-metagame reason to go into those buildings? What was that?
I'll tell you in 10 cannon fodders.
Yeah, that's about how long it's going to take. I knew we wouldn't get anything out of them, but I got to try week after week, Skid.
When I do inform you, it's going to be interesting. And if I told you now, it would ruin things.
Fair enough. What did you think about our decision? Did you think it was what we should do? Did you think it was what we would do?
I thought the party would be split, and you were. I think that, you know, Skid and Grant really wanted to go into those buildings, but Galabras and Baron knew that they had to continue with the mission. I kind of thought you were going to go into the keep.
Okay.
I did, yeah.
Well, we had mentioned it, I think, before going into the sanctuary that, you know, should we just go into the keep? No, let's push toward the sanctuary. So you knew that was on our
minds. Listening back to past episodes, that's been on your mind ever since you saw that the drawbridge was down and then you went in there. And then you go in, and yeah, so the Hill Giant fight, it was what it was. But now you see that, like, they've cleared out these rooms to accommodate giants. So it reveals a little bit of story along with the combat. And,
yeah.
That can't be overlooked.
Well, Troy, do you think that it is better to play the game, to play Pathfinder the way that you would play a video game in terms of trying to clear every room, get all the experience you can, get access to all the items you can? I'm talking about pre-written adventures, of course. Are they written in such a way that you really need to do that to make it rewarding and worthwhile? Or should you, when the GM is giving you hints like, look, you can go this way to get more experience and more stuff before going to the final thing, or do you say, no, my character just wants to go to the final thing?
I mean, I think that's the beauty. Why play Pathfinder? Why play role-playing games if you're just going to do the same thing you can do in a video game? Now, who knows? Maybe there's a magical item in the inner buildings that you need to defeat Grenzeldeck, who is right. in the keep. Or maybe Grenzeldeck is in the middle buildings and not in the keep. You know, who knows? I know. But I think it's more fun to play it in a different way, in a way that you wouldn't play a video game.
And I think that maybe some of the problems sometimes with these pre-written adventures and what I think GMs need to do to adjust them is you need to have consequences for those actions.
Yes.
I think those choices should be there. And I think that you should have the choice to go to the keep or to go to the middle buildings and clear it out and make sure your back is safe before going into what could be the most dangerous part. But by doing so, I think that that should give time to the keep to either man, get more men in there or, garrison up a little bit stronger, make it harder for the players to then get into the keep or something. You know, there has to be some risk reward to that decision.
Yeah, and it's going to drive Skid nuts because I said it in a few cannon fodders ago, I think it's virtually impossible for you to do everything in Red Lake for it. It's just not designed that way.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, that's a true sandbox, and it isn't a sandbox that you're supposed to complete everything, you know, which I think is great. Well, we go into the keep. We find some sleepy hill giants. One is trying to wake up the other one, and we go into a combat that is pretty one-sided, ultimately. We take them out pretty easy, I think. Ingrahild, who we completely forgot to bring into the ogre combat, finally shows up again.
She was watching your back, making sure nobody came through that scythe trap.
And if I'm not mistaken, has a pretty sweet crit with her battle axe or war axe or whatever
about
it is.
About time. She hasn't been super helpful as of late.
Yeah, but she did a great job in that one. So we cleared those guys out. That, to me, wasn't the most interesting thing. It was the conversation with Fabian. And then at the very end, a well in this room,
mm-hmm.
and Lork doesn't notice with a perception check. And we talked a few weeks ago on Cannon Fodder about traps. Now, this is not your traditional trap, mm-hmm. but it's something that a PC can fall into. And you gave me the chance. I said I stepped over the gate and I walked up to the well to look down in it. I did not ask for the perception check. I didn't see the floor coming. I didn't think that would be a problem. And I just sort of wanted to keep it moving. I wanted to keep exploring as quickly as possible. I didn't want to waste any time as a character. And you said, I step over the gate, and you're like, okay, roll a perception check. And I know that if I rolled high enough, you would be like, the floor looks a little blah, 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 but I think I rolled 16, something like that. Just low enough. And Lork falls through the floor. Oh my God, I just have this image of like, they're all, you know, the party's just watching him move forward and then, and then he just disappears from view.
Yeah.
So, Skid, what do you think is down there?
A dead Lork.
That's not funny.
Well, maybe, hopefully baby Jessica, hopefully we can finally get her out of there.
That was an old Twitch joke.
Yeah.
Baby Jessica came up in Dark Souls, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, way back when.
It was well,
in the early days.
I think there's something important down there. I think that well is there for a story reason. And I think Troy really was excited about you falling down. And I don't think it's just because he wants Lork to die. Although he certainly does.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Yeah. So I think that there's...
I'm assuming water. I'm just nervous if it's like...
Did he say, you just fell? That was the end
of
the episode,
right?
That
was it. He just disappeared from view, in my opinion. That's what I last saw. So yeah, I have no idea if it's what it is. I'm hoping it's water, and I guess I'm not necessarily hoping it's water, because if it's water that I'm like submerged in and there's some creatures in the water, like we have to get into underwater combat. I'm wearing armor. I mean, it could be, you could be very well be looking at the end of Lork in episode 65.
Absolutely.
Of the Glass Cannon podcast.
Yeah.
And I am not happy about it.
Yeah.
But we will see what comes. And I have a bottle cap. That's
true.
Saying. I have a bottle cap. All right, let's move on to a fan question, unless you guys have anything else about the episode you wanted to discuss this week. Okay. Tim from New Jersey writes in and asks a fantastic question. It's a little long, so bear with me. But He says, I'm going to be starting up a second Darkness adventure path in the coming weeks, and I'll be the group's DM. I'm really committed to being a flexible and well-prepared DM, despite this being my first real time at the helm. And my question for Troy and Joe is, and Skid, you're here this week, you can also weigh in, because you've done this as well. How do you go about preparing to DM for an adventure path? There's such a staggering amount of information to have at the ready, depending on what actions the PCs choose to take. Red Lake Fork, for example, Fort, for example. Oh my God, I still do it,
Joe.
that I'm worried that there might be too many pauses in the flow of the story while I stop to look things up online and flip through Paizo books. Troy makes things sound seamless between spell effects, stat blocks, status conditions, and area mapping. And I was wondering if there were any tips for a novice DM to keep a steady pace in the game and avoid any big gaps in the action. That is a fantastic question. And
that's
it
a beast of a question.
And it's something we have all done. We've all prepared and run Paizo adventure paths. And there is a lot of work that goes into it. So, Skid, I'm going to start with you. Tell me a little bit about your process and what you try to do to keep the action moving when the players are bringing up things that just send you into areas you're not really prepared for.
What I do is, the first thing I do is I read the whole adventure path.
All six books?
Yeah, I read, or at least I at least read the chapter headings for each book.
Okay,
so I know what happens in each book. So I know that, so I'll be able to foreshadow stuff, and you know,
you have at least a vague idea of the story arc from beginning
exactly,
to end.
Right, and on a session to session basis, what I do is I go through every possible encounter that I think that they'll get to, and I will print out stat sheets for every monster, every creature that they'll run into, hit points, and then I will pre-roll all of the monster's initiative and have that ready to go.
Okay.
So I'll know, like, I'll have them, like, separated by encounter. I'll be, like, encounter one, like, you know, paperclip it together, encounter two, and I'll know where they are in my head. And then those are ready to go. And I will take a break to draw maps, but you can pre-draw maps too if you can think of a way to like cover up areas that they can't fog of war. But I think those are the most important things that I do is just like have the encounters ready to go.
Cool, Troy.
Well, first of all, I want to say it's cool he's running Second Darkness. That's the first player that we've heard is for that was Paizo's third adventure path. It went Rise of the Rune Lords, Curse of the Crimson Throne, and then Second Darkness. What an interesting choice.
Yeah.
So great. Good luck with that. Hero Lab has made things infinitely easier in my preparation. And I mentioned this before because they have the Giant Slayer GM pack available and has every single encounter in there. But what I used to do and what I do for my Jade Region campaign that I run is I put all the encounters on index cards. I also pre-roll all my initiatives for the monsters. Anything you can do to save time like that. And I make an index card with what are its hit points. We have a witch in our Jade Region campaign, so I know it's fortitude save, reflex save, and will save, because I know that our witch is probably going to knock those down throughout the encounter.
Right.
I have its AC, because the AC is going to change. And then I highlight all of its special abilities, because I constantly forget that. Now again,
Poison.
Yeah. I'll never live that down.
You also got to look up, make sure you understand all those abilities too.
The feats and abilities.
All the feats that they have.
That's honestly what takes the most time, I think, for me.
Because you have to learn pretty intimately all these basically just hundreds of different types of characters.
Yeah.
You know,
all the different classes and whatnot. But it can be overwhelming at first. And I think he said he's a first-time GM, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the best things you can do is pick up and read through the Paizo Pathfinder Game Mastery Guide. It is fantastic. A lot of stuff in there, I'd say more than half the book is actually about how to do your own homebrew, and there's certainly stuff you can glean from there on how to change pre-written adventure paths, but all of the early stuff is so vital for just learning how to GM. So I would highly recommend reading that.
For me, when I started relatively recently Wrath of the Righteous, I had already had experience running Council of Thieves, and I had made my fair share of mistakes in that campaign. I didn't really know the full arc at times, and I sent characters on storylines that were going to end up being defunct. I did not really know Chelyaks and the nation and the world that well. And so I couldn't really expound on history checks and stuff like that on the moment. And I would just kind of like wing it and make stuff up that ended up being anti where the story went or what became important to the story. I just fudged a lot of things, and I didn't want to do that the next time around. Oh, I also overpowered the players. I didn't go with what was in the adventure path, and I gave them items that would fit their class better, and then they just became super overpowered, and I spent every encounter trying to buff up the monsters a great deal. So the second time around, I did what Skid said. I read all six of the summaries of the adventures. Then I really focused, though, on that first one, that has the adventure background. The adventure background is huge for the GM because that gives you the pinpoints that you need to research going into an adventure path. So I read that, and then I go and I get and read other Paizo source books about the campaign setting. Mm-hmm. So having Paizo's campaign setting guide is hugely important, in my opinion, to run an adventure path because you can look up races, you can look up nations, factions so quickly in that book and get a great little summary of how they feel about other ones and how they, where they are located and how they handle things and what their political situation is and who their leaders are and rulers are. And you can end up sounding just so knowledgeable to the players. And I would honestly do most of that in advance. Now, having it memorized, no, it's never going to happen. But reading through it, just so you have some concept of these things is really important, in my opinion, to running a good, solid adventure path. Know your history. That's what I think is most important. It's know where the story is coming from, because then you can really give the players great ideas for generating, for character generation at the start of the adventure path. I mean, I would start reading the adventure path and reading Galarian source books before you even start character creation with the players. I would give yourself at least, you know, a month or two to prepare the adventure. Now, if you want to, you're really itching to get gaming, it's like play a couple one-offs with the players to get them in the feel, in the groove. Don't, you know, start out with an adventure path right away and just jump in without being prepared, because it's a disservice to your players and to the module. You know, take your time preparing it, and then once it's time to actually get started, read that first book through again, then read the first part of the first book again, then read the first part of the first book again. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, really detail yourself about, because what is going to make the world more vibrant to your players is knowing the backstories of the NPCs. If you can have an NPC conversation where you know where they came from, what they've been through, so that if the players ask something, you can bring up specific history of that NPC. That's the stuff that I never did in my first adventure path, and I really went out of the way to do it for Wrath of the Righteous, because there's such interesting, deep NPC relationships in that story, in that storyline, and so you got to take the time to do it.
It makes them all feel more real if they have those bones of like a real history and everything.
Yep, if they're three-dimensional like that, it mm-hmm. makes them, and then you end up having NPCs that the players love or hate.
Yeah.
I mean, that is another really great way to invest people in the story, is because you take someone that they love and you can just use them anytime you want as a captive prisoner. In danger somewhere. You know what I mean? And you know the players will flock to that side quest.
I mean, look at Tom Exposition. He was created on the spot because I was trying to give exposition to the characters.
Yeah.
And Galabras went, "Who are you?" And I was like, "Tom Exposition." And now he's become the most beloved NPC in the game. And he just was made up on the spot. But I mean, if you're not a big improver as a GM, you know, plan it out. If they're going to meet XYZ NPC, have a little index card with some things that you want to get across to the players throughout the conversation, and then just keep pointing to those things and have it come out in dialogue.
There's a couple other sources. You mentioned the Game Master Guide, which is pretty essential. There's also some other podcasts. There's a lot of great ones for just game mastering theory. But two off the top of my head are Stories of the Fifth Age. So they have a lot of really good analyses of like how to be a better DM. And DM Block also is kind of the same thing. Also, both very good. There's also theangrydm.com. You can find them on Twitter. They're really, like, nobody knows this stuff, but he's a total dick, and I think he blocked us on Twitter for some reason. but he's great. Like, nobody knows their stuff better than he does. And there's also Nerdarchy, Nerdarchy. They have a channel on YouTube, and they do a lot of great videos about DMing.
Very cool. I think also, and we've mentioned this on Cannon Fodder before, many, many weeks ago, but reading other GMs, summaries of what they did in that adventure path.
Oh, yeah.
Second Darkness has been around so long, you should be going and reading what other people did in Second Darkness. And this is not just to get ideas for interesting encounters. It's also going to show you how players reacted to certain NPCs and stuff like that, and you can start preparing better for what NPCs are going to be liked, maybe not going to be liked, and how to... I mean, I read one where an NPC who was supposed to be maybe a little indifferent or maybe a little disliked ended up getting hated by the party because of the way the GM played him, and he was like, I really went too far with this guy, and now they won't help him in a part of the story that is vital, where he has to be helped. And so it's like, oh, okay, so now I learned from that guy's mistake that I can now take this character and make him not lovable, but a little less hateable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? By easing back off the gas of him being a jerk a little bit.
That's the single best resource for using for playing a specific adventure path is the Paizo message boards about that message path for
yes,
DMs.
They have it for every single book that's come out, every single adventure path. You go on there and it's GM discussion for book one of Second Darkness, GM discussion for book two. They have it for a forum for every single one. It's just for GMs. Don't go looking at it as players. You're going to ruin it for yourself. But if there's a question you have, odds are it's been answered on those messages.
And there's also, they have stuff like user-created content too, like special maps and artwork and everything, or handouts to give to players, like that people who have played the game have created, and they'll post it up there, and that can be great too.
And a time saver.
Yeah, huge time saver.
The other thing is, when you're talking about your specific group of players, it's also important that you are talking to those players at launch about how this is going to go. So you're starting off, you're at the helm of this thing. Sit down with them and be like, hey guys, okay, so I'm starting this thing out. I've done a lot of the prep work, but there is so much to know, and I might make some mistakes, and I might need some time gaps here and there during a session to look something up. Please help me out and give me a break, and don't be on me about like keeping everything rushing through when you know there's so much information here to work with. Talk to your players about being understanding and about understanding when you might have to retcon something or completely change some reality that you said was, you know, right at the start of the Giant Slayer campaign, we asked Troy what season it was, and he was like, fall. You know, and then was like, and I reserve the right to change that when I find out what it really is. Like, you know, that was, you know, just to keep things moving. And yeah, you can always go back, and for the most part, you can go back and change reality as long as, you know, you explain to your players, like, look, I'm trying to keep things moving, so sometimes I have to improv it a little bit, and I don't have time to exactly look it up. But other times, take the time to just look it up. When it comes to drawing maps, Troy, we have to cut that out of the podcast. You know, most of the time, it's edited out. Like, Troy has to draw a map, you know? That time happens. In those times, let the players talk amongst each other. Let them, you know, plan out what they're going to do, or talk about what they think, theories about what is going on, or if they just want to catch up on their social lives. What I try to do is not let them do that before the session starts. So when we're getting into the session, everybody's getting set up, I try to get to work right away, not let them catch up. Oh, here's what's going on at work, blah, 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 blah. There's going to be time during the session for them to do that stuff when there's downtime for you either looking something up or making maps or whatever. When you say you're going to start a session at 7 o'clock and everybody's there at 7 o'clock, get started. Don't chit chat for a half hour or an hour. You're losing time that could be the gap time while you're preparing stuff.
And your players will need and appreciate those breaks too, so don't sweat it too much.
Yeah, don't sweat breaks, because sometimes it's too intense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The players will love the opportunity to, you know, go out and grab a bite of food, or make a phone call, or what, you know what I mean, check in with their family that they haven't seen in days because of the Second Darkness. You know, like, these kind of things are important.
Yeah, I mean, we could honestly talk for hours. You got three GMs in the room asking how to be a better GM. But one thing I like is I have my iPad or a laptop on me at all times, and I have a bunch of windows opened up to possible things that could come up. And as they come up, whether it be a monster stat box, whether it be a certain history check that I think they're going to make, like, what are the Knights of Ozum? I'll have Pathfinder Wiki up about the Knights of Ozum, because I know you're going to roll that history check. And then once you guys go through it, I just X it out. So I might go into a session where my iPad will have 20 different windows open, and hopefully by the end it only has three or four. Yeah. And I just X them out, X them out, X them out.
Yeah, the Wrath of the Righteous campaign that I run is on Roll20. So when I go into a session for that, I have the same exact thing on my Chrome. I probably have 20 to 30 tabs open of feats of monsters, feat explanations, poison DCs and what they do. And then, yes, Pathfinder wikis of the history of specific factions or nations or whatever that I can look at a quick glance if a player needs it. And then I do the same thing. Once that monster's defeated, I exit out. Once that history check has been done, I exit out. That's a great way to save time.
I also, this isn't really having to do with being more efficient as a GM, but just as far as creating a mood. In my house, like I have my desktop hooked up to my big screen TV. And I have surround sound and everything. So what I can do, well, I'll throw up, and our old GM like started doing this. Like I'll throw up some evocative art, like based on like where the party is, and I can throw up pictures of NPCs, like if they're available, like from Paizo, or the whoever actor I've cast as that person. I'll throw that up on the screen. Pictures of monsters they run into. And then on the surround sound, I've got the Sirenscape going on the whole time. You guys really should play at my fucking place. It's awesome. If you get a chance to play one of my games.
Skid, you just opened the door for a lot of people to come over.
I'm not actually.
What's your address?
Come by my house.
Last thing I'll say is there is an app that I think we have all purchased. I know for me, it's been amazing. It's called PFRPGRD, in Pathfinder Role-Playing Game Resource Document, PFRPGRD. Look for that on the App Store. And I believe it's $4.99. It's about the best $4.99 I've ever spent. It's just a summary of all the books, of all the Paizo books, but it doesn't have all the gritty details that, you know, help when you have the time to prepare, but it's great for quick access, and you don't need to be online, which is huge. All of the documents are downloaded to your phone. So if you're in a place where your cellular data is no good, or you don't have Wi-Fi on your iPad, and you want to just look up a feat real quick, you can type it in the search bar. Usually it comes right up. It's not 100% because you don't really have all the it has all the books in it, but it's not perfect, but it is.
The search engine
for $5
isn't perfect.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but for $5, it's great.
It has basically everything on there, and it's a lifesaver if you don't have internet.
Yeah, if you don't have internet, you need a quick answer.
Oh, yeah. We got to get that from Matthew. Because you're going to look up Scorching Ray. Awesome. How many, what's the damage? Hold on 1 second. You can just, it's 4d6 or 3d6 or 2d6, whatever. It's
right,
all right there.
Right. You're just having that on your phone, like boop, you could look it right up at the table. So yeah, highly recommend that as well for time efficiency. All right, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week, unless you guys had anything else in particular.
I just wanted to piggyback one more time on what you said. A great way to learn to GM before you jump straight into an adventure path, do one of the Pathfinder Society scenarios they have. You can buy them for like $2.99 or $3.99 online. It's a great way to practice being a GM with the group of players that you want to play with and not feel like, if I do something, it's going to change the story forever. Practice with those.
And you're also going to get the same exact structure as you get in an adventure path. You're going to get the adventure background. So you're going to learn a little tidbits about the nation, the history, the people that are going to be involved. And it gives you that pace, that sense of, and then it's part one, part two, part three. You see where the encounters are laid out. You see where the diplomacy checks come in. You see where the experience comes from. It's just a good way to train yourself.
It's just
before
one,
jumping in the deep end.
It's just one night rather than 10 years.
Right. Exactly. All right, guys, thanks again for listening. As always, we appreciate you writing in, asking us these questions. We want to get more of them on the air, so please write in to glasscannonpodcast@gmail.com with the subject line Cannon Fodder, and remember to let us know where you're from. We cannot wait to answer more questions for you next week on Cannon Fodder as we find out what happens to Lork in episode 65.
You guys want to start a second Darkness campaign right now?
Yeah,
let me shut this down.
All right,
let's do it.